Good morning. Everyone can hear okay? Yeah? Better? Yeah. Okay. So next weekend, I'll be leading a Mahamudra and Dzogchen retreat at Lotus View. Not everybody here will be there, but I'd like to talk a little bit about Mahamudra and Dzogchen, maybe those people that can't physically be there could be doing some, you know, practice at home, so to speak. In tantric practice, in our tradition, when we take highest yoga tantra, we promise to do what's called a six-session guru yoga. That's a it could be a long text, but actually it could be very short. So we say we're going to do it six times during the day. The way to start doing this is actually just start doing a sitting meditation six times for 6 minutes. The meditation practice is about maintaining awareness throughout the day rather than always trying to build up a big storehouse and then run off of that, you know? Sometimes we have the idea that if we meditate 2 hours in the morning, then we'll have more kind of battery juice to run off during the day. Does anybody ever think like that? Maybe I was the only one. Okay, thanks. Yeah. That's possible, of course, too, but since all of our practice is based on being present now, we actually need more like a generator rather than just a storage tank. It's important to have both, you know, but in beginning the practice, if we begin saying, okay, six times during the day, I'll take some breaks, and for that amount of time, do some sitting practice, or mantra practice, or singing, then when you start doing highest level practice, you'll already be doing six times a day. So then it's easy. So we can do a lot in 6 minutes. We can establish motivation and intention and view and rest in the nature of mind and even dedicate it all in 6 minutes. Most of the trouble that we get into are silly ideas and our emotional outbursts. If we just waited 6 minutes, we probably wouldn't do it. You know? And even then, most kind of silliness, the emotional energy, even anger and desire or passion, doesn't last much longer than 6 minutes anyway, also, right? So I wonder if, you know, maybe someone's a real athlete here, but could you run as fast as you can for 6 minutes? I bet you couldn't do that, right? Like running a sprint for 6 minutes? Maybe when you're 19, yeah, you know. So this six is kind of important in our tradition because there are six yogas in Kalachakra, and there are six paramitas, and we like fives too, but there's something about the time, 6 and 12 and 24, that works with our rhythm. So when starting a meditation practice, in our tradition, we start off fairly short, and then we kind of fill in. So if we're meditating longer, we just figure we're filling in from the next 6 minutes, you know, 2 or 3 hours down, like that. But in my practice, I always think, well, I'm doing 6 minutes, and everything else is kind of extra. So I never get into this like, oh, I didn't get time to practice today. I'm bad Buddhist, you know. So if you think, well, I'm doing 6 minutes, then anything else is extra. Isn't that right? You know, usually I'm up around 3 or the latest 3:30, so I have plenty of time to do my meditations, you know. But I still pause, I still do my succession guru yogas, right? Because it's really easy. Maybe there must be some application or something, some dharma application on our iPhones, right? To do 6 minutes and remind us 6 times a day. What do you think, is there? There's something, must be something. Yeah. We can use technology, you know, to help us out. You know, as Dharma people, we're not against, we're for technology, actually. So if there is an app, or we can find that where it will support us for 6 minutes and we can program it to like, oh, okay, it's coming up, then that's really good. It doesn't have to be a specific kind of meditation, but usually in our tradition, we would generate some kind of intention, right? Take refuge, and then we do the main body of the practice, and then do dedication always, even if it's just 6 minutes, very quickly. Of course, we can meditate for long periods of time. A traditional retreat, we won't be holding totally traditionally, but traditional retreat is 4 hours at a time, 4 times. So you get up and you do 4 hours, and then you'd have breakfast and wash up, and then we do 4 hours, and then have kind of lunch, longer lunch break in the afternoon, and then 4 hours, and then into night. That's 16 hours. And when you're meditating 16 hours, you really don't need that much sleep, maybe. You know, in deep meditation, maybe even in 6 minutes, you know, we talk about mindfulness and alertness, but the mindfulness and alertness we're talking about is not the mindfulness and alertness from our normal kind of coffee style mindfulness, right? You're being mindful from your primordial nature. You're being mindful from your awareness. So you can actually be a little sleepy from conventional standpoint. Isn't that good news for some of us sleepy people? Yeah. So when we're meditating even for 6 minutes, or whether we're doing 4 hours, the quality of mindfulness and awareness and, you know, primordial awareness is coming from our essential nature. It's not coming from our individual personality. That doesn't mean we won't wake you up if you start, you know, kind of... When I was studying with Trungpa Rinpoche in Boulder, one of the students there, since became a very good translator with Nalanda Translation Committee, his name is Jules, and his nickname was Judd, you know, just normal nickname. But we called him Thud, because he could actually, like, his head could actually hit the ground. And, you know, like before waking up. And that's quite an accomplishment. You know? Yeah. You know, to be, to fall asleep that deeply. And then, yeah, totally, like that. There's a famous story where, in China, no, maybe it was Hakuin in Japan, came in to the Zendo and saw all the monks sitting, you know, very strong Zen style on the tan, the raised platform. And but one monk kind of hiding away at the end was just kind of, you know. And he said, all of you are wasting your time except the monk sleeping away there. So sleepiness is not a problem in meditation because we're the Buddha nature is actually always awake. That's what you're practicing from. Likewise, it's not a problem in 6 minutes or 4 hours if you have a lot of thoughts. Of course you have a lot of thoughts, right? The job is not to get rid of a lot of thoughts. So my favorite metaphors, some of you know, is the best meditation is when you finish shopping and you're, you know, just sitting in the mall and you're watching all the people walk by, right? It's very peaceful. Or you go into the Apple store and it's completely chaotic, but it's totally peaceful when you meet up with your assistant, so to speak, you know. So you can be very peaceful in the midst of a crowd. In fact, that's what we're practicing to. We're not practicing to blankness. We're not trying to get rid of the thoughts. We're not trying to get rid of the people. We're not trying to, you know, say me first. So we're practicing along with everything that's going on. Why? Because thoughts are not a problem. Thoughts are just expression of the mind. discursive thought and absolute nature of the mind aren't the same, but their essence is the same. I'll be talking about this in the retreat, you know. So we can't say that if you're not in touch with you know, Rigpa, if you're not in touch with absolute nature of awareness, that, you know, it's okay to just sit there and think, because then you are caught up in your discursive mind. So even though thoughts are empty, just as Rigpa's nature mind is empty, they're different. This is a big distinction, right? It's kind of tricky. It's kind of tricky because many meditators make that kind of mistake, like thoughts are totally different when they start off and try to get rid of them. And then sometimes advanced meditators get kind of lazy a little bit and go, well, it doesn't matter, you know, I'll just kind of like just sit there and think, because nature of mind and nature of thoughts are the same. But there's the same in the sense of both empty of own being, but they're not the same in the sense of the factor of recognition. So what we're after in our practice is recognizing the nature mind, not sitting you know, in the mall and then forgetting where our little bag is, right? And then walking up and, you know, getting up. You ever done that at the mall? You know, you're sitting there, you have like your Nordstrom bag, or you have your you know, another little bag there, and then you get up and leave it there. Maybe I'm the only one that's done that. So not understanding that actual discursive thought is still different than nature mind is that we go into unconsciousness. The ultimate nature is emptiness, but the expression of thoughts, the functioning of thoughts, and the open dimension of awareness is still different. So we take the middle way in our approach. We're not trying to banish our thoughts, but also we're not forgetting where, you know, if we just bought a nice little thing from Nordstrom or the Apple store, we're not just getting up and walking. Also, you're not just kind of leaving it there. You know, it's like I learned in India, like you just don't kind of, you don't get on a train and just kind of put your bag next to you and go to sleep. Anybody here done that in India? Yeah, no, you have a chain and it goes through your back and then it goes around your waist, you know. So like that. So we're still maintaining even though we have a lot of things going on in our mind when we're meditating, we're still maintaining awareness. But we're not pushing the thoughts away. It's interesting, right? So we're kind of keeping them close, but close with that awareness chain like that. So these kinds of things we'll be going over in the retreat. But even in 6 minutes, you can be kind of sleepy, and just like you can be kind of sleepy in the mall, you've done a lot of shopping, you've been on your feet, but you have that connection with your being. You're not forgetting where you are and who you are. You're not forgetting, I'm sitting here, I'm just shopping, and I'm watching people come and go. That makes sense, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why in this, it's important to do temple practice with other people. So we're sitting here with our eyes open, and kind of like we know people are here, and they're right here, and we like them here, but we're also holding them like thoughts. See, you're sitting next to people, and they're kind of there, but you know, it's not totally the focus, but it's not the focus, right? When you're sitting next to somebody, like you know you're sitting next to somebody, but you know, you're still maybe on your breath or mantra or visualization or something, and you're aware they're there. So you're not tuning them out, but also, you know, you're not, you know, totally focusing on them anyway. If you do that, you'll get annoyed. That's one of the fun things about retreat, is you can notice your state of mind pretty easily, because on retreat, or maybe even just the short time we're here, you know, you might be sitting next to somebody and they're just incessantly clearing their throat. Or they're just breathing too hard, or they're moving in some strange way, or like you're just trying to meditate and, you know, silent, and they're doing their mala and making that annoying clicking sound, right? So that's an indication, like, okay, how much are we aware that the person is there, but not like over focusing on them. So like when we're at the temple here and it's necessary to get together with people because everyone is kind of like a little thought or a little emotional energy that's present. And if you learn how to sit with other people, you'll learn how to sit with your thoughts and your sub-personalities. This fall, I hope to be doing another refuge ceremony. Taking refuge in our tradition, we do the fourfold refuge, taking refuge in Lama, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. It really means that we're taking, as Alex Berzin says, taking safe direction. We're getting support, and we're getting guidance. We're basically knowing where to go for help, and we're saying we're going to use that help. Taking refuge, just saying, well, now I'm Buddhist, that's not the point, because actually just saying you've joined a club or have a new label doesn't do anything, right? We've all tried it, like, okay, now nothing happens, right? So actually in this in Asia traditionally there's no word for being Buddhist. Are you aware of that? There's no word for it. It's just the inner person in Tibet. You say, are you an inner person? Right. They're just saying, I'm following Dharma, you know, but there's no label, you know. So I've noticed sometimes when people think refuge is like, now I've become this, then nothing happens. So it's not about the label. It's about, like, are we willing to, you know, take safe direction? Are we willing to be open to support? Are we open to guidance? So I'm not so interested in turning out Buddhists. I want to turn out Buddhas, right? So the refuge is so that we say, I'm going to use these practices to benefit myself and others. I'm going to put them into practice. That's what we're doing, taking refuge. Even though we get a refuge name, it's an inspiration and a pointing out to our essential nature. There's no book of life where your name goes, you know? There's no name in the sky, right? It's just our reminders of what we need to do and who we are. So when taking refuge, going for a safe direction, we're basically saying, I'm willing to work with the Lama, I'm willing to work with the Lamas, I'm willing to read, I'm willing to, you know, follow this path and see what happens. So I think it's really easy. It's not as hard as doing our craziness, is it, right? So it isn't, from my side, it isn't, you know, so important that somebody says, well, now I'm this or now I'm that, you know. Luckily now, you know, we have, didn't California just, somebody just passed, like, you don't have to check the box whether you're male or female now? Is California, yeah. So, but what does it say? What's the check?
You can choose male, female, or I think gender neutral.
Gender neutral, or, you know.
State.
Pardon me?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really neat, you know. So we're not joining a club that, you know, we're walking a path and taking a direction. Buddha Dharma is really interesting. It's not a religion in the traditional way. It's not a psychology in the traditional way. We could call it humanistic religion or sacred psychology, but mostly way of life. Right? So when, now that Geshe Damchula is back, we'll be doing a refuge ceremony with him present, and everyone who's already taken refuge can renew their support and guidance. So last thing before we have questions is, for your 6 minutes, you know, when we start, you always start with support first and then, you know, pledge later, right? So you always start with the Lama, me or Shakyamuni or Dalai Lama, whoever, in the center, and all the teachers and lineage people and friends and your pets and everything, just sending you light and smiling, right? You always start with support. You don't do like, okay, now I'm going to go all alone. You always start with support. And then based on getting the support, you can say, I'm going to do this practice. I'm going to benefit others, right? I'm going to challenge my craziness, or I'm going to help someone else's craziness or something. But you start with support first. And then you make the effort. So that's why we do the prayers. But there's always a visualization of love and light coming your way. It's very kind of new agey. We get to really be new agey. The love and light's always coming. We get the support. We get filled. And then we kind of go, okay, I'll do this thing. I can do this. I'll work with my emotions and my health and my thoughts. I'll benefit others. After, you know, you've taken in the energy. That makes sense, right? Okay. People forget to do that. You know, they start like, they're just kind of sitting there going, I can't do it, you know. And, you know, we can't do it if we're not filled first. So please go to your inner, like, gas station first, and then fill up, and then you start the practice, whatever you do. So maybe that's 1 minute in or something, then you got 4 minutes, and then at the end we dedicate. You don't have to use the formal prayer. You can just say, you know, may everyone benefit from my practice. Isn't that great? We don't go, well, that sucked, I thought too much, and now I gotta go to work. No, you don't do that. You can say that later, like, about something else, but just, yeah. So even if you have tons of thoughts, even if, like, you're sitting there in the mall and you put down your bag and, you know, the nice little bag you get, you know, gets lost, you know. So we dedicate it, saying, then the dedication means it's kind of like our insurance. Then we say, you know, all the benefits from this practice may benefit myself. That's okay to benefit yourself. And may I share that and benefit with others, right? Sharing it doesn't mean you give away. Is this talk too basic? We'll do questions. Yeah, I don't think it is, but, you know, so some people say, well, do I have to give away all my realizations? No, you can keep them. Yeah, no, just share them, all right? Yeah, right? So you say, may this benefit others. May I share this with others, you know? So like that, like come and eat, right? So that's easy. Sometimes I like to go over basic practice, but for some people maybe this is too simple, but even for advanced practitioners, sometimes we fail to distinguish between the nature of mind and the expression of mind and thoughts, right? So they're different. Expression's a little different. The pure, lucid, open awareness that's unceasing and unborn is a little bit, it's still a little bit, and the thoughts are a little bit different, even though they're both empty. Because I know, like, after a while, you practice more and more, and you enjoy going to the mall, and it seems like more thoughts show up, right? People say, well, it's getting worse. I'm getting worse. No, actually, it's getting better. You're noticing more, right? When we turn on the light, you notice more of the dust. You know, when you have your eyes open in meditation, particularly if you're like sitting here kind of Mahamudra Dzogchen style, you're just looking straight ahead. Like you see everybody in the room, right? Like, where did all these people come from? No, they've always been there, so it's no problem. So you're not getting worse. You just might be, the light's getting brighter so you can see the dust, right? So we want to focus on the light, and we want to be delighted that we found, like, oh, wow, there's still, I didn't get that little window way up high. I have to get up there again and clean it. Then it's delightful, right? Yeah, okay. Do I dare ask for comments, questions, complaints? Yes.
Yeah. Probably at least 6 minutes before my brain will settle down, so do I need to do another additional 6 minutes?
If we're doing, you know, have the correct view, meditation, action, you know, like, more is better, for sure. But see, you want to train too short. See, because all our stuff happens quickly. Our idiocy happens really quick. So you can't say, you know, to your anger, to your craziness, like, could you give me 20 minutes or half an hour? It's going to be like that, right? So actually we want to train to short, but you do one short after another. You know, that's particularly true in Dzogchen and Mahamudra. It's not like, you know, you're just doing one short after another. So you could say, huh?
In succession? I mean, is that two of them back to back?
Once an hour.
Well, you might, like, we don't really say in Muhammad, like, you're doing a long meditation. Right? We don't really say that in Dzogchen. We don't say, well, you're doing long. Yeah, it's just, we don't even say there's really a moment, you know? Yeah, we're just, so in shamatha practice, in relative practice, we'd say, like, do more practice. But, like, each practice, each moment, each 6 minutes is complete in and of itself. So you can say, well, you know, but if you say you have more time, then you can sit there longer, right? But in a way, we, from a relative point of view, yes, we can say it seems to deepen over time, right? It seems to be that way, right? It seems like we're settling in, definitely, in relative practice. It seems like, you know, it takes us, you know, 24 minutes to settle in, or it takes us 2 days, or it takes us a month of retreat or something to settle in, right? But actually, you know, each moment, each presentation is just fine because absolute nature of mind is there. So we should be thinking like our absolute nature, our Buddha nature, our Rigpa, I'm in, my Rigpa is with my confusion right now. I'm just hanging out with my confusion right now. We're learning to clarify our confusion. Yeah, we don't really interrupt it. It looks like that from a relative point of view, yes. But you know, when we've got a lot of restlessness, or it seems like we have a lot of distraction, really the view is that our awareness, everyone's taking refuge as Yeshe, our awareness is. Sitting patiently with our confusion, or you know, like that. Otherwise, we get into too. You know, even our relative practice becomes very dualistic. Like, I just want to get rid of this, or this practice isn't good enough. You know, or I didn't get to sit 24 minutes, or whatever your time for relaxation is. You know, and you go, well, that wasn't so good. I only got in, you know, 18 minutes or something. So each time is like that. So if we're sitting here. And we're sitting quietly, and people in the temple are snoring or restless or coming and going. We don't say it was bad meditation, right? Yeah, we're just saying, okay. We're sitting with awareness and confusion at the same time. That's a good question. Hi.
Hi.
Dana did it first, but...
Yeah.
It's okay. just yanking your chain, yeah. Yeah, you can do that. Yeah. Generally, you want to make it universal, but yes, you can do that. So that's why in retreats and monasteries, you have these kind of general prayers like, may all beings be happy, and blah, blah, blah. And then you'll spend the next half an hour dedicating to individuals. And, you know, kind of, it sounds kind of like in a prairie home companion or something like that. You know, they're... like that, yes, you can do that. Yeah.
So to clarify, for the groups that we lead, when you do 24 minutes,
yeah.
Group,
yeah.
Does that mean I only have to do 6 minutes for them? Should I ring the bell every 6 minutes?
Yeah, sometimes I've done that. Actually, every once in a while, you know, kind of. I've rung the bell, you know, just as a kind of reminder to come back, you know.
I did that with my veterans group, and they got mad at me because I woke them up.
Yeah, that's funny.
So,
that's pretty funny.
I did it. We're
Yeah.
So
Or longer, yeah. No, actually, it's in a group, it's easier to sit longer for most people, so we should train to that, you know. But basically, you know, we're kind of renewing it, in a sense. Yeah, so the way we do from a higher meditation standpoint is we're not gradually settling down or deepening it. You know, that's a shamatha relative practice approach, which is good. But actually, we're just refreshing it, so to speak, like that. But even though we're sitting a long period of time, I mean, you can be sitting there for 4 hours in Mahamudra's style meditation, but there's a sense you're refreshing it rather than deepening it like that. So, you know, actually, you know, periodically, you know, ringing can be a good idea. When we're doing mindfulness shamatha meditation, and we start doing some analytical or vipassana meditation, we're going to have experiences they traditionally go together. We call them bliss, clarity, and no thought, right? Where temporarily the discursive thought will clarify, like the clouds will part. The lamas, and me too, are always pointing out that this is a good thing, but if you become attached to that, then you'll end up being reborn in the form or formless realms, you see, because it's so, the mind is so graspy that it'll go, that's it, I've, you know, attained bliss, I've attained clarity, I've attained no thought, and then, you know, we grasp onto it. So actually, in Mahamudra and Dzogchen, I think maybe last month I was reading a little bit, maybe it was Saturday, I can't remember, from Patarimshe, like, in Dzogchen, we're trying to interrupt that state, interestingly. We've advanced to the point where we don't need, that it is being continuous, so we don't need to, like, hold on to it. You know, we're kind of actually interrupting it. You're actually kind of looking, pardon me? What's continuous? In what reference? We tend to hold on when we have experiences of bliss, clarity, or no thought. We tend to grasp onto those, and we try to maintain them or go back and recreate them. You know, it almost feels like, you know, our mind or our Buddha nature is working against us. Like, shoot, you know. First of all, it feels bad because it's great, and then it goes away, and we go, oh, gosh, you know, and then we go chasing after it, and then we go, oh, no, I'm not supposed to chase after, you know, da-da-da. Like, oh, okay, don't chase after the chase after. Oh, okay, you know. So we get all balled up. But, you know, that's where, as meditation instructors, you know, we can point out that this would happen. So, you know, it's more like we appreciate it, but then we just go back to the technique. Yeah, we're not saying like bad or good. You know, we're just saying, well, okay, well, experiences of bliss, clarity, and no thought. But the until we really understand the nature and functioning of awareness, there won't be realizations, right? So that's something I kind of hammered away back in April. You know, that how do we turn these spontaneous experiences into realizations? Okay, realizations meaning that they're becoming stabilized and non-fabricated. Because the tendency afterwards is we see the unfabricated state, and then weirdly we want to recreate it. Isn't that so? That's exactly what we want to do. Like, there's the unfabricated nature of mind. Okay, so you know, we don't want to just let it be. Yes, sir. Yes, it's not a mental state. Actually, it's not an experience. It's a huge disappointment. We go, well, wait a minute. Isn't it supposed to be this fantastic experience? But it's not. We could say it's the foundation of experience, or it's seeing our experience correctly. Reading a lot of Yogacara Chittamatra texts, or even Mahamudra Dzogchen, is when we're talking about mind, it can be very misleading, because the English is not very serviceable for deep meditations, right? So in Sanskrit and Tibetan, there are just a zillion words for each aspect of awareness, and then we just have this mind. So that's why, you know, that's a whole other talk. It's like, well, what, when we're talking about mind, what are we really talking about? Is it perception? Is it awareness? Is it discrimination? Is it concept or non-concept? You know, then we have to get into the weeds with it. But it's not going to be a mental state. Yeah, that's clear. It's not going to be an experience, you know. Actually, it doesn't mean that experience is not generated, you know. It's like if you find, you know, your keys, you know, the finding, it, like you lost your keys, you're running around the house. So when you find them, the finding itself is not an experience. You just found them. But depending upon how long you were looking and, you know, who's honking the horn, then you could generate a lot of emotional experience, right? You go, oh, this is great, I found them, you know, or something, right? So you could have a profound experience that is tied in with direct perception. That happens a lot, you know, because the emotional energy can come along with it. But a lot of times people generate the emotional energy because they feel they're supposed to have it, you know. And then a lot of times people have an emotional experience along with meditative experience or realization, and then they think they shouldn't have it. Like, they'll say, well, I just had this joyful experience, but I know I'm not supposed to have that. And you go, no, you had a joyful experience, so that's what you have, you know, so mazel tov, you know. So that's why we need a teacher, actually. Do we take one more question and comment and then take a short break? Yes, sir. Yeah, that's a really good question. It's both imaginative and actual at the same time, you know. So we can say, you know, we have, you know, we're just remembering, okay, I've got this, right? You can say, oh, I've got a line thrower, and oh, I've got supportive family, friends. But then also we need to use our imagination too, because we tend, the idea is we tend to concretize the support and limit it. So we might say, yeah, I got the support, I got a nice cushion, and yeah, people understand what I'm doing, and that's great. But then the mind tends to stop there. So we're bringing the Mahayana and Vajrayana sense of support. Mahayana generally will be, it's immense, right? So I say, great vehicle, it's immense. So we just don't think, well, we've got friends here. We visualize, you know, like, they're just Buddhas and Bodhisattvas all over the place. That's why, you know, the Lotus Sutra is so important, you know, this immense support. And then the Vajrayana support points directly to, like, you know, our Buddha nature, our awareness is always there. That's the ultimate support, right? I mean, it can't go anywhere. So we can do the support on those three levels: our actual support, our the Mahayana support of imagining the vastness, and then the direct perception. And pets. Yeah, I was good. You know, like there was a very famous Mahasiddha, Kukaripa, who the dog Mahasiddha, like that. Yeah, just meditate with your dog. I don't know about the cat. There's cats too, of course. Very simple meditation instruction. I'll give credit to Baba Ram Das's book, Be Here Now, right? That's still good, right? But I want to add, you know, rhythm to that. So our breath has a rhythm, our mind has a rhythm, and our interdependent world is expressed through this pulsating world as brain rhythm, heart rhythm, breath rhythm. So be here now with rhythm is what we do in Dharma. It's easy, right? And then we'll have some announcements at the end. I think we have some birthday cake or something. Yeah. After the Buddha gave a talk, he retired and to his hut or whatever, and then the practitioners would repeat everything. So it wasn't just Ananda who remembered everything. Of course, Ananda did, but then after the talk, they'd just sit around and repeat it and discuss it, right? So Dharma's always been that oral tradition. And eventually the Buddha's talks, generally called sutras, were written down, and then other teachers would be giving talks in there, be written down. So even when we're reading a book, it's we're imagining it's always at the same time being spoken, right? And kind of discussed. So a lot of times people say, oh, I don't read, or I don't, that's not Dharma, I just meditate. Well, we've always, coming from India, we always discuss things. Everything's discussed, right? So we remember and we pass on. So the books, were, even if they were written out, we consider them part of that tradition. So I've been interested in, you know, of course, having kind of book club things. And I think we've started kind of a little online already. Is that so? What's going on with that?
Busy.
Okay. So we need two book clubs. You see, one is maybe kind of online talking about Dharma things, but then we also need book club books to read that are regular novels and anything else, you see. Because in our tradition, we have to learn all the arts and sciences. We're not separate from the world. We need the medicine. We need to know how to write and read. We need to know how to, you know, fix lawnmowers and stuff like that. You know, all the arts and sciences were taught at Nalanda, and the Dalai Lama's encouraged us to learn all the essential arts and sciences, from healing to technology to reading and writing and speaking and so forth. So we need to have that. So my Tai Chi fellow trainee meditation student Harriet's volunteered to lead like a novels, the novels. Is that so? Yeah, it could. It doesn't have to be just novels. Like, could be anything. Yeah. So one, if we have two clubs going, that would be the best, you see. Then some people can do online and read Dharma things, and some people can get together and using the wisdom we've gained from realizing our essential nature, then we can take anything and learn from it. So it's when do we want to have the in-person book club? Okay, yeah, we can send that out. And When do you want the online thing to go, Renee? Yeah, I know you've been doing a lot. I'm just, this is monastic style, putting you on the spot. Like, what are you doing? Okay. Okay, good. And it's essential, you know, in Buddhism 21st century that we have both physical presence, but we also have online presence. I've been very much promoting, as people know, for the last 4 or 5 years, the Foundations of Buddhist Thought course out of Jamyang in London, and delighted that, you know, a great number of people have finished that. So that's all online, right? Good course, right? Yeah, so we need that. Like, we're doing a new website, and we need our own, you know, kind of Alliance or a meditation app on something like that, right? So we need to do both, don't we? So you work on that too, Renee, and then next Sunday then have a meeting of people that want to do that? Yeah, that's great. It's really important. At the monastery, people talk about books, but they also talk about sports. Did you know that? Yeah, did anybody see the movie? Yeah, The Cup? Yeah. So actually people do that. They get, you know, you finish the prayers and then you're sitting around and you're talking about sports. Did you have one last announcement?
Well, I was just going to offer, I'm a graphic design major and I do a lot of online everything.
Okay. Oh, good.
So if anybody is
doing
the website, need help with any of that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. We'll be talking. Then, yes, Renee? He's back.
Well, yeah, I know he's back. When will he be, like, officially back?
That's a good question. I don't know.
He will be starting Friday. He'll teach the first Friday night of the month. So I think that's, like, what, November 3rd? Whatever the first Friday night is, yeah. November. And then he will be teaching Long Rims the second and fourth Saturdays, again, starting in November.
Oh.
Soon.
At 10
a.m.?
Huh? Back at his
10
a.m.
Yeah.
Spot?
10
a.m.
On Saturdays, yes. Yeah.
Good. And then, Deborah, you have announcement? Do we have, what do we have back in the dojo community room? Also, I'll be here for an hour or so. I like to say hi to people. So I just generally sit back in the Tara Library office, but people can come say hello, and Patty can help with that, right? Yeah. Okay, good. Good to see everybody. Thank you. Let's do dedication.